Welcome to Career Tools. Today's topic, completing self-appraisals. Here we go.
Folks, Mike and I say it all the time, our licenses for our written materials and the parts of our products that go along with the audio show is the most valuable product we provide. We encourage you to come to the website and check out all the benefits of being a licensee. Thanks.
I don't get a chance to be on Career Tools Cast much anymore, so I am looking forward to this, my friend. This should be fun.
Should be fun. Exactly.
And today we're going to talk about self-appraisals, right? And whether your company does appraisals on the anniversary or start date or at the end of the year, it's common that you have a chance to give yourself an appraisal. And we can tie ourselves in knots, and we often do, about what kind of score we should give ourselves. So we're going to make it easy. In this cast, we're going to tell you.
I'm regularly amazed that A, people don't take advantage of the fact that even if your boss doesn't ask for it, you should write a review on yourself. And you have to be sensitive to the company's natural tendencies regarding reviews. And your job is not to inflate things, but to be accurate, to give your boss data that he or she can use. And then I'm also amazed that when a self-appraisal is requested, that it's way overinflated. So, four pieces of guidance here, folks. First, you can never give yourself the top assessment. You can't.
I'm going to stop right here. I'm done. I'm gone. See you later.
Yeah, exactly. So, because you're Mike, if you're Mike and you're that good, of course, you have to fib and you'll have to say you're not that good.
So hard.
The second thing is you actually start at the bottom, work your way up, and you give yourself at least the lowest number above unacceptable. And yes, this is being politically savvy. And, you know, politics matter, folks. And if you think a 5 on a 5 scale is accurate, trust me, we're about to tell you why it isn't. And the third point we make is choose the company standard. And then you got to know, what did you do last year? If you got a review last year from your boss, that should give you some indication of where you might be relative to the company standard. If you rate yourself too highly and you already have data that you're not that high, you're saying something about your lack of contextual awareness regarding your performance, which causes concern to bosses.
Okay. Well, look, let's get right to your crazy, absolutely
exactly.
Crazy first point, right? Look, I know I blew away all my targets last year. I just knocked them out of the park. I developed relationships all over the company. And you know me, I did it with one hand tied behind my back. And you're saying, even under those conditions, I can't give myself a top assessment?
Exactly. The only person who can give you a top assessment is probably your boss's boss. Your boss probably won't even do it, unless there's enormous inflation. But even if there is enormous inflation, and there often is in reviews, and I could spend hours talking about reviews, guys. Reviews are not originally designed to provide you feedback. They were designed to provide succession planning data for the company. It's an organizational tool. It's not a managerial tool, even though we do have some of our best casts we ever did. It was 8 years ago, right about now, Mike.
Oh, my God.
We did our first cast on reviews. We did, I think, four parts or five parts. I can't remember. It's very long about how to prepare, how to write, and then how to deliver someone else's review. And then, of course, we have a podcast about how to prepare for your own review and getting data and so on. But look, you've got to be sensitive to what your company does. If you put down the top assessment, you're sending the message that you think you're perfect and that you can't improve. Neither one is true. And so therefore, remember, it doesn't matter what you think, it doesn't matter what you say, it doesn't matter whether the person reads or hears, all that matters is what they think they read or think they heard. And what they will think they read is, you're perfect and you can't do any better. Both of which are false. And we generally don't get ahead by making false statements. It's a bad message for you to think about, I got the top score, because it implies you can't get better. And it's definitely a bad message for the company. You know, if you put in the same performance next year as you did this year, and the company improved by 5%, you've actually slipped by 5%. Next year, you actually need to be better. And so you need to give yourself somewhere to go in the ratings. If your boss wants to give you a 5, fine. Okay, great. And look, you may have a picky manager who never gives anybody the top rating. And that would be the opposite of what is true in many companies where things are overinflated. When Mike and I were in the Army, you didn't dare get anything less than was it a 1 or was it a 5? 1 was the highest score on the front of a...
Yeah, 1 block was the highest.
No. I mean on the front, dude. There were scores on the front. There were a series of quantitative scores in the front. Of course, the senior rater profile on the back with a ranking relative to everybody else was the key part. It was what everybody drilled in on. But on the front, there were scores, and I think you had to have ones and everything. And if you didn't get a one,
game over.
It would be a kiss of death. Yeah. So we know there's inflation, and we respect that. And you still can't give yourself top score if your boss doesn't give anybody a perfect rating. And nothing's perfect. This is classic for high C's. They don't give any 10s out of 10 or 5s out of 5 or best possible. And they never give 10s when they provide customer service feedback to somebody. And they literally say, that's the best I've ever seen, but nobody's perfect, so therefore I can only give you a 9. It puts that boss on edge. That's not how you want them to be thinking about you.
Okay.
So you just can't do it. Now, is it possible there's one person listening right now that their boss actually overinflates on an already overinflated system, and they have passed 5s and they actually did better and you can give yourself a 5? Sure. And I would still tell you, if I was your friend and sitting next to you, give yourself a 4. Let your boss bump it up to a 5 and let him chuckle. Let her chuckle and say, God, I've given you 5 2 years in a row. Why are you giving yourself a 4? Well, I know there's ways I can improve. It's not my job to tell you I'm the very best. If you think that's great, boss, and I'm humble enough to admit I can get better.
That's a pretty good message to give.
Yeah.
All right, so let me take that logic to an extreme, and I might as well just give me my self-evaluation as the lowest number possible. I might as well just...
Yeah, okay. And weren't you saying you were smart a minute ago or something, or I implied that?
No, apparently not. I can't give myself a 5 anymore.
So yeah, exactly.
So yeah. If you're not first, you're last, right? I mean, somebody said that. I don't know.
I think everybody knows that the lowest end, which is would be rarely used in virtually any system, even a system of 1, 2, and 3, the lowest would be something akin to literally not meeting standards, beneath standards in a way that would cause alarm bells to go off. And so you can't give yourself the lowest number because you're not that bad. You still have a job. And we all have weaknesses. There are those areas of ours that are not strengths. I think a lot of people, when they hear about weaknesses, they think of, am I weak relative to the average in a given context, maybe everybody in this company or everybody in society or everybody with a degree like mine. And that's not it, folks. We don't do that comparison. What we do is, of the 50 skills, if in fact we could characterize 50 skills, there are some that are above average and some that are below average. Your own average, okay? So my point here is you have to show that you're reaching the minimum standard. And you wouldn't want to send a message to your boss that you're not reaching the minimum standard. It would make him or her raise their eyebrows and go, what am I not seeing? This is terrible.
Right.
You don't want to overdo the modesty thing. Your job is not to be modest. It's to be truthful and smart. Okay. Now, this is the difference. I often joke with people about the difference between truthfully persuasive and persuasively truthful. And we want you to be persuasively truthful. The noun, truthful, we want you, there has to be truth. And then if you can make that truth persuasive, so much the better. But you're grounded, your basis is in truth.
Now look, if people are not as stupid as I acted just a second, or I shouldn't say as I acted, as I am, right? And the opposite of best is not worst. And I doubt there are very many people out there who would take our advice not to rate yourself at the top, to mean that you should rate yourself at the bottom. But what you're saying is, even if you feel in a particular area that you did terrible, like you were the worst, you would not advise rating that number.
Yeah. In fact, as a general rule, if it's a 3-point score, you know, above, you know, exceeds standards, meets standards, doesn't meet standards, you can't give yourself a 1. And in that case, you can't give yourself 3. So you give yourself 2s across the board. Now, you might not think that's very smart, but it's politically very wise. And your boss has to make the decision anyway. If you're on a scale of 1 to 5, you can't give yourself a 5. You can't give yourself a 1. And in most systems, you probably would not give yourself a 2, because a 1 or a 2 implies you're performing below the norm for that job. Now, if in fact you've been on a performance plan, and 2 doesn't say you're beneath acceptable standards, you might be below average, but you're not beneath minimum standards for the job, you might could give yourself a 2 in a particular area that you think is contributing to being contributing to your ranking of or being on a performance plan. But frankly, the numbers would be 3s and 4s in that situation. And what we're really saying is you probably ought to be 3. The fact that you're still there is objective evidence that you're not below acceptable. So if you know you're very weak, put the next score up. If you're average, choose the average.
Let's talk about it. When you say average, average in terms of what you think the job skill, you know, this job, say skill, for example, requires, or average relative to my peers?
Peers. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, if everybody's doing really, really well and you're on a good team, you can get away with saying, I'm average for the team, even if, in fact, you guys are in the top 10% across the company. You just have to be careful of arrogance. You have to be careful about saying you're better. Any belief on your boss's part that you are ranking yourself higher than he or she would is a cause for notice. And we don't want that. And that really brings us to the third point, which is choosing the company standard. Usually, the rating system, whatever you've got on the quantified side, come with numbers and with words. There'll be a 5-point scale, and it'll be things like outstanding and very good and needs improvement and unsatisfactory. In this case, good, or a 3, is the company standard. And it could be outstanding, very good, acceptable, needs improvement, or unsatisfactory. A 3 would be acceptable. You were acceptable. You're still in the job. And you might say, well, gee, I don't think of myself as being acceptable. We're not asking you what you think of yourself. We're asking you what would be tolerable for the kind of system that you're putting down a score on. We don't want you to sit around thinking, oh, I'm only doing acceptable. We want you to understand there's a greater danger of you overranking yourself than there is of underranking yourself. And some of you are probably listening to this going, geez, big companies, they make it so hard and so on. And, you know, you'd be right. We respect that. That's why this is not organizational tools. It's manager tools and career tools. And we give you recommendations for you as an individual within the system. But if you're a part of the system, it doesn't do any good to ignore that you're part of the system. It's a bit like knowing you're an air breather and suddenly being underwater and wonder why things aren't working very well. Well, it's because you're not paying attention to the system you're in. And we're not suggesting that you're being accurate in a numerical way regarding your performance versus some knowable standard, because there's your boss's standard, there's HR standard, there's the company standard. We have situations all the time where there are forced rankings, which I can't wait. At the end of this cast, Mike, I want to talk for just a minute about what some people would call rank and yank, which is a joke, but the whole idea of forced rankings. And, you know, there are systems like that in place, and you have to be aware of it. And this review, you're trying to show some sensitivity, and you're trying to provide information to your boss. And look, companies have appraisal inflation. Everyone, in those situations, everyone is given a higher score than they deserve because managers can't bear to give their employees a needs improvement. In other companies, the managers know that all appraisals are followed by level setting leading to pay situations, or level setting on the other side where everybody's scores go down by 1 and they bump things up until it goes into the system. We've talked before about the steel cage deathmatch meetings, and you need to have done well relative to everybody else, but you can't be seen as trying to step on other people to keep your job if in fact there's a layoff, and your boss is responsible for doing that for you. So we got to be careful. There's politics involved, and that's why we make the recommendation we do. And then the last thing you got to do is look at what you got last year, right? If you're having an appraisal this year, there's a chance you had it last year. Maybe you're in a different job or the system has changed or whatever, but you can still use your last year's appraisal to help you. Look, if you've been working on something, even if you've been working on something really hard, it's unlikely that you went from the lowest score to the highest and working with other people. You may have gone from the lowest to the minimal acceptable. You know, if you were the lowest last year, you might have made minimal acceptable.
Well, yeah, look, and even if you became the best person in the company, that particular skill, like working with others, for example, it's not likely that your manager is going to sign off with you getting the highest score this year, right?
And you might say to yourself, well, gee, are they going to do a comparison? Yeah, that's the whole point of it. It's an organizational tool. They'll notice that somebody went from a 1 to a 5, and they'll question either the 1 or the 5. And you don't want people questioning these forms, particularly. Right. And you don't want your boss creating extra work for your boss.
Yeah. And your boss is subject to review, right, too? So if you were a 1 last year and get a 5 this year, that their boss is like, what's going on with Mark there, right? I mean,
Yeah. So if you can, within the guidance we've already shared with you here, Move yourself up on one notch on those things you've been working on and which your manager knows you've been working on, and you can actually point to some traction on it. He may not have seen a change in something that he's not looking for, and then leave everything else pretty much the same. And if you feel that that's not completely accurate and it's over-politicized, yeah, you're probably right. And all human systems inherently lack accuracy and often lack precision as well. And that's okay. This is not designed to be accurate because 30 people looking at one thing see 30 different things. And you have to be smart. And let me just say this about, there are some people who are probably thinking, this sounds much like, you know, an annual review and think the system isn't good. And yeah, you can complain about it and you can do what I did when I was 22 years old and say, I'm smart, I'm good. You know, luckily I was early in my Army career. Hopefully Mike will echo that. But I also said, I'm not playing politics.
And thank God you're really good at
otherwise. Yeah, because I not only didn't play politics, I actively worked against politics and said, I'm so good, come after me.
Oh, you went around sticking your finger in people's eyes. Yeah.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah. And in fact, you know, Colonel Texera once said about me, he says, I feel like I'm Lincoln and you're Grant, because somebody said, you gotta fire that guy, General Grant. He's a drunk. Says, I can't spare this man. He fights.
There you go. You know,
I can't get rid of Horseman. He knows where all the bodies are buried. He's my right-hand guy. But man, I wonder what my career had been like if it hadn't taken me as long as it did to figure it out, right?
That's the real question. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So let's talk about Rankin Yank for a second, sort of a special gift for those of you who have made it this far in the cast. I get asked all the time about forced ranking systems where a company says, we're going to grade, you know, the top 20% of people and then the middle 70% and then the bottom 10%. Essentially, it's a bell curve, if you will, and the top 20 get extra pay and benefits and so on. The middle 70 are important. They're vital middle, often they're called. And then the bottom 10% is essentially sent a message that you're not working out. Okay. And this is often called rank and yank. In other words, if you're in the bottom 10%, you're going to fail. You're going to lose your job. And the fear, one of the arguments against it is, well, if every year the bottom of the company is improving and I'm consistently improving, but one year I have an off year, suddenly I'm in the bottom 10%, you know, I could be doing pretty well, but the bottom 10% keeps catching up to me because we're getting rid of the weakest 10%. You know, I might get caught by that. Now, there's a case to be made abstractly that, yes, that's true, and the company has to stay fresh and current and so on. But the fact is, there's not a whole lot of data which suggests that companies year after year get rid of the bottom 10%. They don't. In fact, Microsoft, this is 2013, we're recording this, just got rid of the system. And there are all kinds of names for the system, but the names are always designed to be inflammatory. But the fact is, the system is an incredibly valid one. The company absolutely is obligated to know who its bottom 10% are. And if you're a smart company, you know where those 10% are in terms of who their managers are, and you want to look for patterns with managers who tend to have people in the bottom 10%. And yes, there's times when that person is unethical and just throwing somebody under the bus. And that's why manager tools and career tools exist, to get rid of all those sons of guns who behave in ways that are unethical. But that said, if you're in the bottom 10%, the company ought to know that in advance. The manager, you ought to be aware that you may be in the bottom 10%, and the manager ought to be making extra efforts to keep you. And if you're in the bottom 10%, it's not as if you're in the bottom 10% and then suddenly you're gone, like you're standing in a bridge and ask, you know, what's the top speed of a swallow or something like that, and then boom, you're gone. It's not that. Now, there are stories, there are anecdotes, and of course, all anecdotes are dramatic, where somebody says, yeah, I work for a big company and I was in the bottom 10%, I lost my job. Well, they leave out that there was a great deal of effort, at least in the companies that really, really apply it well, there were a great deal of effort to try to keep the person. And we have something called late stage coaching that teaches you how to do that. And while I'm often quoted as saying, look, if somebody does something like this, you have to fire them. But I also end up 95% of the time saying right after it, and it takes 6 to 9 months to fire somebody, because if they're here, we want to keep them, because the cost of turnover is expensive and you're obligated to keep them if you're a manager. So when you hear the phrase rank and yank, that is a dramatic phrase that is false 99% of the time. It's interesting. It's clever. It makes for good cocktail conversation.
Exciting,
yeah. But that's what all kind, you know, why do they show airplane crashes and not safe airplane landings on TV? Because they sell ads, because drama sells, because people want to know about things that are distinct. The TV shows that are all reality shows, they aren't reality. They're designed to show, they take 20 hours of footage and they get 30 minutes worth of stuff. It's not the reality they're showing you. It's the one, the few bits of drama.
Yeah, I hope
by the way,
the
people on the reality shows know that they have to deliver drama, and they talk about it in between takes. And a big reason they have reality shows on because they're a lot cheaper because they don't have to pay writers. That said, systems whereby we identify who the bottom 10% are, even if that's not the intent, is a good thing, because we ought to be putting, if we've got somebody here, we ought to be putting attention toward how can we help that person improve. Now, if you're in the bottom 10% this year, and your manager and you come up with a plan to get you out of the bottom 10%, and all of next year you stay in the bottom 10%, we're going to have a different conversation at the end of the year about how you're not performing, and maybe you need to find another opportunity within the company, or maybe you need to go somewhere else. And it's often, I hear stories about, yeah, I was in the bottom 10% and then I got fired or I got laid off. Well, actually, there are a lot of companies, I would say, regarding layoffs, if you're going to have a layoff, why wouldn't you lay off the people who are weakest performers rather than going across the board and saying who's youngest or who's oldest? Those things are essentially ineffective or arguably unethical. If you're going to have to lay somebody off, which is fundamentally an admission of management failure, wouldn't you want to lay off the people that are less effective? That said, if you're going to get fired, generally speaking, the point they leave out is, yeah, I was in the bottom 10% and they gave me 18 months and I couldn't improve. Or I improved because I feel like I'm getting better at my job, but the company is always getting better. Didn't we just do like a manager tools cast about the idea that you have to improve at 3 to 4 to 5%? Or that may have even been a career tools cast. That in order to stay current, you know, if you're a manager and your direct folks tells you, I don't want to improve, I want to stay where I am. The definition of staying where you are is keeping up with the market, which is 3 to 4 to 5% per year. Let alone if the company's growing at more than the market rate, you have to keep up at that rate. You can't stay flat. You can't be doing at the end of the year what you're doing now. You're then 5 to 10% behind the market, which is slowing the rest of the organization down. So don't believe what you've been told about rank and yank. There may be places in the world that treat people unethically, but there are places in the world that treat people unethically with a lot of other systems besides forced ranking systems. It helps managers. Many managers are unwilling or unable to say, here's my top performer, here's my middle performer, and here's my bottom performer. And yes, sometimes the buckets, the sample sizes are so small that some managers feel like they have to put somebody who's actually doing quite well into the middle, or somebody who may be at the low end of the middle, they have to go into the bottom 10%. Yes, and smart, ethical managers and HR people, we'll figure that out and we'll say, okay, this sample is too small. Does it happen that there are samples that are too small and people get hurt? Yes.
Yeah, sure.
All big organizations essentially make mistakes, just like all of us do as individuals, because all big or even middle or even small size organizations are nothing more than multipliers of human behavior. And if there are human mistakes, then they'll get multiplied. But don't believe everything here about rank and yank. And don't call it that, particularly if you're a manager or an executive, because it comes across as selfish and fearful, neither of which the system is designed to do.
And ignorant.
Yeah. And that's the rant. Sorry, folks. Okay. So quick wrap up, Mike. You don't give yourself the top score. You don't give yourself the bottom. You give yourself the highest number above the lowest score that you can tolerate. Make sure you know what the company standard is. Pay attention to what you got last year. And it wouldn't hurt to remember that appraisals only tend to get thought of at appraisal time, and they often go in a drawer and managers don't pay attention to them next year. So be aware of the politics and the sensitivity. I'll never forget being in a company that says nothing happens in January, because at the end of January, everybody's reviews are due and the managers aren't good at writing reviews. So it takes the entire month of January to write everybody's reviews around here, and nobody gets any decisions made, which I thought, wow, that's 8% of the year gone. So be aware of the politics. Be aware that there are impressions made. And impression management, managing your impression on other people, matters. It's better to be aware of that than to get hung up on what you think is an accurate score for you, which may have negative political consequences.
Awesome. And Jerry, well, thanks for tolerating me, dude. Appreciate it.
Same to you, partner.
All right, man. We'll see you later. Thanks, everyone. It was great joining you this time. Hopefully, I'll get a chance to do it again sometime in the near future. In the meantime, have a great one, folks. So long.